I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love the text we got about our last topic. I'm just trying to stand up for the short guys in the world, you know, Dan? Like, I feel like it's just become too accepted that, like, there's something wrong with someone who's 5'6", 5'7". I'm 5'10". What's the cutoff for short guy, you think?
5'10".
So am I. I'm good. I'm good?
I know I'm below it.
How tall are you?
5'8 and a half.
Oh, you are?
And I cling to that half.
You're a short king.
Yeah.
What do you think about a filter on the Tinder?
I think this is a positive thing in this sense. If somebody's going to be so obsessed with my height that they want to use a filter, pay to use a filter, probably not the person that I want to be with. So
yeah,
sort of self-selects, you know what I'm saying?
Get rid of the goons. Texter saying, Jason, if you're a man and you apply some sort of superficial thing, you're being shallow. If you're a woman, well, you're not settling. Well, what are the odds that text came from a man? Now, a 5'8 woman texted and said, I am madly in love with my 5'8 husband. So she's probably, you know, when she puts the heels on,
yeah,
towers over him. Alyssa, I'm 5'10, 5'9. Like, as I get older, I keep shrinking.
Yeah,
all do. That degenerated disc in my spine is no good.
Doesn't help.
So I'm shrinking. Alyssa's like 5'8. So she's pretty tall. And then she puts the heels on. She's taller than me. I don't care. You know what? I don't care if my wife is taller than me. I would prefer that she makes more money than me. So a lot of insecure guys out there, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand it. Let's do the D Rush Hour News headlines. The lead.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the DeRush Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And as Governor Tim Walz travels all around the country, speaking to Democrats, perhaps positioning himself for a run for the White House again, he is urging Democrats to stop being so nice. Listen to what Tim Walz said in South Carolina.
Maybe it's time for us to be a little meaner. Maybe it's time for us to be a little more fierce. Because we have to ferociously push back on this. And again, I'll speak to my teacher colleagues in here. The thing that bothers a teacher more than anything is to watch a bully, to watch this bully and to stop it. And when it's a child, you talk to them and you tell them why bullying's wrong. But when it's an adult like Donald Trump, you bully the out of him back.
Whoa. I don't know that we need so much of that, but I do think this tone shift is Democrats trying to test out what do they want to be and trying to say, well, let's compromise. Let's talk to Republicans. Sorry, folks. That is the politics of 30 years ago. The politics of today is galvanize the people who are already on board with you and then make little tweaks to try to get the people who could be convincible. Saying that Democrats should talk tougher, be meaner, it's not exactly the one Minnesota hunky-dory politics of joy that perhaps we thought we were getting with Tim Walz, but also the world has changed. Is the politics of joy what Democrats want? I don't think so. Not judging from the Democrats that I've talked to, not judging from the text line from hardcore Democrats. People want to fight. Republicans wanted a fight 10 years ago, and guess what they got? Donald Trump. Is Tim Walz the fighter for Democrats? I don't know, but the message to me makes sense. If you want to hear more of a conversation on that, subscribe to our YouTube page, youtube.com/WCCO radio. You can rewind right now to our first half, our second half hour, where we had that conversation. Next up on the lead is a global effort to get a Surgeon General's warning on social media. On Father's Day, this Sunday, 30-some organizations will come together urging a warning on social media, including a local organization that is focused on the prevention of suicide. Suicide Awareness Voices of Education, SAVES. Executive Director is Eric Mishy, who joins us in the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline to talk about why, Eric, why does SAVE think that this is a good idea?
We think that young people in particular need to have a stronger degree of safety on social media. And one way to do that is to provide a warning label and provide both young people and parents and other adults the opportunity to understand what those harms are on different social media platforms. Not just a mental health warning, but a warning that makes it clear that things that go on these platforms might be sextortion, sex trafficking, sale of illegal drugs, bullying. All these things combined contribute to a situation where we're seeing higher degrees of suicidal ideation and suicide, particularly among young kids.
Don't you think everyone knows this stuff? I'm curious why you think a warning label would change or increase knowledge that isn't pretty widely out there already.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that, Jason. I think that there is an assumption that parents know what is happening on social media platforms. Talk to any parent who has had a child who has been the victim of sextortion or sex trafficking or bullying on social media, and they'll tell you that they weren't aware of the extent of the danger. Talk to any parent who's lost a child to suicide after an encounter on social media, and they will tell you they weren't aware of the extent of the danger. You could talk to parents whose kids have played choking games, literally dying by playing a game that is being out there viral on social media, and they'll tell you they weren't aware of the extent of the dangers on social media. I think there is a general belief that kids spend too much time on social media, that kids spend too much time on their cell phones. But I don't think adults, and particularly parents, truly understand the depth of the crises that kids are dealing with social media. Do I think warning labels are the end-all be-all here? Absolutely not. There needs to be significant regulatory reform at a state and national level.
Are you surprised or disappointed, or how would you characterize your reaction to the fact that there's really been silence on this from the big technology platform?
I'm more concerned and disappointed that they have spent millions and millions of dollars at a local level, a state level, and a federal level to stop any kind of regulatory reform of their products. It is reminiscent of the tactics and strategies that big tobacco used to try to stop any kind of regulatory reform to protect the American public. What type of moral obligation do these companies have to the safety and well-being of kids? And I think the answer that most of us would give is that they have a major obligation to fix these products. That they don't want to is driven by profit.
Eric Mishy, appreciate your advocacy and your work to try to prevent suicide in our young people. And thank you for being with us today.
Jason, thanks for your time.
Father's Day is June 15th, 1 week from Sunday. That is when they are doing what they're calling Global Warning Label Day. And so we'll see if anything comes of that. All right, one more item in the D Rush Hour news headlines, and that is the news from the Star Tribune's food critic that he is done. John Chang, the restaurant writer and critic for the Star Tribune over the last 3 years, announced with a full belly and a closed notebook, he is stepping down. in this story that is online right now at StarTribune.com. John talks about some of the challenges of being a full-time critic. He says the duty to visit restaurants near and far and then explain why a restaurant would deserve attention would often take me out of the moment. Casual meals that should have gone unrecorded became sticky mental drafts. I had lost, in some regards, the ability to taste. I don't mean literally, but as a real diner who could find pleasure in the little things, I found myself always looking to be wowed. John has been on a leave of absence over the last 6 months. I actually emailed the Star Tribune on Friday asking what was up, if they were going to still do food writing and restaurant reviews, because I think it matters. We are in an age of the influencer, of the TikTok fancy video of a restaurant. But in this town, we really have two people who are full-time restaurant critics. And one works for the Star Tribune, and one is Derek Moskowitz-Grumdahl from Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. There are lots of people who write about food. I review, sort of review. I don't do a full review. I recommend, basically. And it's important. So I appreciate the Star Tribune. They tell me today they are going to hire someone to replace John Chang. It's expensive, man. The New York Times posted a little accounting of one review that they did cost $2,500 in dining out and tips and drinks, etc. It's expensive. What other article do you do for the newspaper? One article that cost you $2,500 a crack. Now, this isn't New York City, but it's still expensive. And that dedication to having a critic, I think is significant. I salute John for stepping away. It's hard work. I know it doesn't sound like it would be hard work. It sounds like it would be fun. And it is fun. But when you have to eat out for writing all the time, it becomes a job like anything else. That's the D-Rush Hour News headlines here on CCO. We're going to turn the page to page two in just a minute. Reports of downtown St. Paul's demise may be premature. And do you think public money should go to build a Mall of America water park? We'll talk about that next. On this 92-degree day, D-Rush Hour News headlines, page two. Let's start with reports of downtown St. Paul's demise may be premature.
I thought you were dead.
My death was greatly exaggerated.
Fred Mello with a terrific story in the Pioneer Press looking at ongoing investment. Big stuff happening in St. Paul. So he talks about the Avalon. The Avalon is a new event center in one of my absolute favorite spots on Rice Park, the James J. Hill Center, which used to be like a business research library. Just such a gorgeous, gorgeous building. So that is being developed by Peter Remish. So that's big stuff. Also, new restaurants opening up. The Avalon, they hope, will open to weddings by late fall. On Wabasha Street, Chef Terry John Zilla has relaunched the kitchen in the basement of the Osborne 370 building right next to the old Ecolab building. They're turning Ecolab Tower into apartments. They've got a new event center next to Aboulé, a new restaurant called Six Mirrors that's opening where Barrio was on Mears Park. So stuff happening already. The Landmark Towers has been opened up, 187 new luxury apartments. That's about a $80 to $100 million conversion from 26 stories of offices into housing. Should public money go to help build Mall of America water park?
I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
I mean, I think the answer is yes, right? Like, do we want a water park at Mall of America? Yes, I do. I think it'd be amazing. Now, the public funding question, well, that's where That's where things get messy. Star Tribune with that story today. So this is a bit of a challenge to sort of explain how this all works. Mystery Cove is the name of the water park. It's been planned for a long time. Man, I feel like Mall of America has been talking about water park in this town for decades. The legislature has to give permission for the city of Bloomington to release this tax increment. Have people fallen asleep yet when I'm describing this? But basically, the property tax that the Mall of America generates goes into this TIF fund. And it used to be that TIF money could only go to like the public good. So it would be used for affordable housing, used for infrastructure, stuff like that. Well, post-COVID, they let cities like, well, just invest in something. It's fine. Spend the money. I do think it's super weird that there's no water park, right? So many tourists come to Mall of America. Wouldn't it be awesome to have a water park where people would bring their families, make a weekend of it? The only water park is the Great Wolf Lodge, and that's not huge. Now, the flip side to this is if this is such a no-brainer, what do they need public money for? And I get that, too. At a certain point, you're like, could we build it? It's a big freaking parking lot. Ugh. So we'll see what in between all the other stuff the legislature is trying to work out, like I'm sure this is low on the priority scale, but this is part of the budget bill. Will Canadians show up to the Blue Jays Twins series at Target Field this weekend?
Take off, you hoser!
Yeah. I love this story because it's one of those things where you're like, oh, like I kind of wondered that too. Are the Canadians going to pack their bags and come on down? Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul Business Journal doing a story on this today. Now, normally, Matt Hodgson from the Twins says the split is like 60% Twins fans, 40% Blue Jays fans. Dan, have you ever been at Target Field for...
Oh, yeah, for Blue Jays series. It's always very raucous crowds.
It's
and a lot
pretty
of fun.
Accurate, right? Fun, like, yeah. Yeah, it's like, I mean, 60-40 is crazy, but all those Toronto people are like, hey, yeah, let's come on down. Matt said that pre-ticket sales are down. Last year, the series happened over Labor Day weekend, so they had about between 24,000 and 32,000 people for each game. And Matt says, based on where our current numbers are, replicating those numbers is not going to be easy. Now, we like Matt Hodgson. Let's just take a moment. What a beautiful PR quote. You did it, Matt Hodgson. That was very well done. I mean, you can't just say, like, no way in hell we're going to get that. So, like, it was just very nice. There's a bus. The Canadians are mad. That's all. You know, some of it's the economy, but... the Business Journal interviewed a tour company based in Regina, Saskatchewan. It's Regina, though, right? It's not Regina. It's Regina, and it's Saskatchewan. And they usually bring a bus full of people. It's usually 50 people that come down to shop, come to the game. So far, they have 25 people. So, like, I don't know what the sample size is here, right? Like, we're talking about interviews with 25 people. But most of them, according to the tour group, is saying they're not going to the U.S. because of the political climate. About half of Minnesota's international visitors come from Canada. So Canadian border crossings into Minnesota were down 22% in March compared to last year. That's from Meet Minneapolis. We love our Canadian neighbors. Don't take it out on Minnesota just because you're mad at Trump. You know what would make Trump really mad? If you came to the liberal hellhole of Minneapolis. See, Meet Minneapolis should hire me, Dan, to do this. Would be my kind of tourism. Hey, Canada, want to stick it to Trump? Come to Tim Walz country, where Tim Walz says you got to bully the S word out of Trump. I don't know. Does that?
Yeah, I think Meet Minneapolis would love that for sure.
Edgy, a little edgy. That's the Deer Rush Hour News headlines. Dave Schwartz on sports coming up in just a minute on CCO.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
And Dave Schwartz is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And Dave is also streaming on YouTube right now. If you go to the WCCO Radio YouTube channel, and I invite you to go there. You can go there anytime during this conversation and rewind to the 2 hour, 30 minute chunk to see Dave, because Dave, Dave, during the break, was holding up what appeared to be some cast situation. What is happening?
Yeah. So,
what happened?
A bit of a car accident over the weekend. I'll say this. I'm very fortunate to walk away. It was not a good situation for either me or the other driver, but we both walked away. And that's what I take away from it. We walked away alive, broken wrist, a couple busted fingers, and a truck, but all that stuff can be fixed and replaced, and lives can't. So we both have ours today, and I'm grateful for that.
It is one of the scariest things that'll happen, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's like you watch in the movies where there's that moment of complete silence and it happens so quick, you don't even know. And this person pulled out, I hit the brakes, and next thing I know, the airbags are out and everything's kind of chaos. There were some amazing, wonderful people who were right at the scene who rushed over to my truck and you know, helped me out and got me onto the side of the road, and the ambulance was there quick. And boy, I'll tell you, the first responders, if you're a first responder, you have my respect, because they were on the scene, they were fast, and they worked smooth and swift. And I was really, I could not be more grateful for everybody that was there in that day.
When you're in that moment, and I don't know, most of our listeners probably have never had the airbags deploy in their car.
Yeah.
But it's aggressive when those things pop open, isn't it?
It's so quick, and I don't know if you just black it out or if it happens so fast you don't even know. It's a blink of an eye, Jason. It really is. And all of a sudden, I remember I'm about to hit this car, and I hit my brakes and turned and grabbed and embraced and closed my eyes, and the next thing I know, there's, you know, the airbags are out. It's puffs of smoke. I went, okay, I'm alive.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. And then, you know, you get out of the car and, you know, it's just, I've never had it happen before where you have so much adrenaline rush through you that you feel sick. I've experienced that. But I got out of the car as fast as I could and sat down on the side of the road and just sat there and was grateful that I was there. I was grateful to be sitting there. So, yes, sir.
Yeah.
It's scary things. It's scary things. You never know when your moment is. And so I was by myself. My kid was supposed to be with me, but she decided not to come with me, which I'm really happy for. As you know, with kids, you're just happy that it's yourself. So I'm okay, though. I'm good.
You look good, but it's...
Thank you.
You know, not to be, like, trite and obvious, but, like, this is the kind of thing that, like, it takes a bit to get over it, I think. And I don't know...
It does.
Yeah, I don't know that it ever fully fades away, but, like... You'll be a little mentally messed up from this, I would think.
I was in the car today, and it takes a second. You know, I wasn't even driving. It's like we were somewhere over the weekend, and it was a little scary. But you'll get over it. And I can't underscore this enough: the profound sense of gratitude that not only that I'm here and the other driver is here, for all the people that helped in that moment and that day, because it was a long day. And for my wife, who was there, with me in the hospital all day, too. So
how did she, how did she find out?
I called her. I called her right away and said, hey, I want you to know there was an accident. I'm okay. They're taking me to the hospital. And my wife is calm, cool, collected all the time. She said, okay, we'll meet you at the hospital. I said, okay. So Oof. Yeah, scary stuff. Scary stuff. Enjoy it. Live every moment. I'm telling you, and I don't mean to be too, go too over the top of this, but I looked at the front of my car today, and you look at that, and you go, "Wow, I'm just glad I got to walk away from it."
Yeah, and I hope that a lot of our listeners have never experienced it, but it is, I've never been in a. Well, that's not true. I totaled my dad's car when I was driving to the homecoming dance as a teenager.
Yeah.
And the girl I was going to the dance with, Chris Kassin, is sitting in the front seat of my dad's, Chrysler station wagon. And somebody pulled out in front of me. It was a rainy night. Yep. Somebody turned left. I didn't think they were going to turn left, and they didn't think I was going to keep going, and there it was.
Yeah.
But, that sits with you. And then, of course, I had the time on the way to work when a wrong-way driver was coming straight head-on at me on the interstate and then did end up crashing into someone else and killing them. And you have that
moment. I don't think you're ever truly prepared for it. You often think in your life, what would happen in the case of an accident? How would you react if something was about to happen? But it happens so quickly, you don't have time. It's instinct. That's it. And so you just, I was trying to get out of the way as much as I could. Yeah. And going 50 miles an hour, you can't.
Right. Right. Oof. The truck is totaled, of course.
It is. It's totaled. We went to the salvage yard to see it today for the first time and collect everything out of it. That's a sobering moment when you see the front of your truck, and glad that I had a big vehicle, glad that I had a good truck, and it did its job. Yeah. It did its job. It kept me safe.
All right. Well, we got to find out what a car that was, and that should be our new sponsor of this segment.
I'll tell you, it was a 2019 Dodge Ram, and I'm going to buy another one because it was a great vehicle.
All right. We're going to take this sound of this conversation and send it to every Ram dealer in town. Get Dave Schwartz a sponsor. Dave, I'm glad you're all right, man. I didn't know about this, but it is a reminder to, and again, it sounds so obvious, but when you go through something like that, it does make you stop and say, you know what, the little stuff is pretty little.
Yes, and I'm not ashamed to admit that it was an emotional day when you stop to think about what would have happened if a kid was with you, if a wife was with you, if a dog was with you, that I'm man enough to admit that that brought a lot of tears that day, but grateful, again, that it was just me, so we don't have to think about that.
All right, let's break, and then we can get back to the goofy stuff.
Let's talk about fun stuff. Yeah.
Well, this is fun in a different way because I'm so glad you're all right. All right,
thanks, brother.
Stay right there, Dave Schwartz. Drive Time back in a minute on CCO. All right, Dave Schwartz is with us. We are taking the temp of the Twins, and this was not. I don't know. I don't quite know what to make of the Seattle series. These were entertaining games. They were good games. Twins took one, dropped two. I don't know. What is the temperature of the Twins right now for you?
I mean, you still look at it. What, they're second in the Central? I mean, even with second or third in the Central, with all the ups and downs, they're kind of, I don't want to say they haven't moved at all, but they're pretty much where they were. I take of it, The big thing for me at this point that I'm kind of curious about is when Royce Lewis is really going to start to kind of turn it back on again. I just he's got slump beyond slump, and it's going to take some time. But yet again, they're third in the Central. I was just looking at that real quick. But, you get a series now with the A's. The A's are not good. So hopefully, as we've said many times, you come out of this is a series that you should win easily, you hope. Against a team that's not up to your par, so I just think it's either the temperature to me is lukewarm. Which is what I feel like it's been the whole season.
Yes,
lukewarm.
We had a little stretch of where I was like, it's heating up a bit. No, back to lukewarm.
It kind of always that's what you get with a 162 game season. Yeah. Though. I mean that's what it is. You just kind of sit in the middle. And there's many seasons where the Twins are, and that we've seen it a lot of times, where they're a couple games out and a lot of games out, and they make kind of a push. So to me, where you are in June and July never really matters a whole lot, unless you're so far ahead or so far behind. But if you're middle of the pack, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint. You're just maintaining your position, and then you make a big push at the end, hopefully.
Lynx look good, though. What the heck? 7-0?
7-0, but isn't it funny that even though they're 7-0, Cheryl Reeves still like, we could be better.
Well, many of those were like under 6 points. The first, they got a dominating win over the Valkyries yesterday, but the first six were like within 6 points, right?
They have yet to put a full game together. They've had some really dominant second halves, but first half has been where the issue is. And I think that I was reading an article about the Valkyrie game, and Cheryl kind of came in and said, listen, like, we're better than this. Come on. You know, we can be better. And then they come out and they have a great second half. So it's amazing. The good thing is that they're 7-0. They still have not put their best game on the floor yet.
Dave Schwartz is with us. The Star Tribune had a very interesting story on how the new Trump tax bill may complicate the sale of the Minnesota Twins. One of the items in the big, beautiful bill it kind of closes a loophole that helps sports team owners reduce their overall taxes. So this could make it more difficult where the Twins are sort of valuing their team under the old rubric. We'll see. I don't think something like this really is going to stop it. But
I mean, if you have enough money to buy a major league sports franchise, are you really that concerned about the taxes?
That's how these guys get this money. They're cheap and they're trying to screw the tax system. That's how you become a billionaire.
Is that it? If I'd have known that, I would have done it a long time ago.
It's not that hard.
It's all it takes.
Dave, I'm going to take you to the Minneapolis club. They allow guys with, you know, slings, and that's allowed in the dress code.
I'll wear my sport coat over the top, a matching one, so it blends in.
But we're due for lunch. So
sounds great.
Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing your car accident story
of
with
course.
Us. And
yeah, no problem. Of course. Happy to share it. I didn't say much about it because it ends up leading to more conversation. So we'll just get it all out here and be done.
Exactly.
I hope.
Exactly. Right. Is that how it works? I think so. All right. Good stuff. Dave, have a good week and we'll visit with
you
soon.
All right, buddy. There you too. See ya.
Dave Schwartz. There it is. If you're watching on YouTube, Minneapolis Club, you can just go to Charlie's. You don't even need to be a member. I, of course, naturally. I mean, come on, Dan. Of course I'm a member.
That's just how you roll.
You know, man of the people. Something like that. fun show. Make sure you check back on our YouTube channel. You can re-listen to any of this. We'd love if you would subscribe at YouTube and WCCO Radio.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.